This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 16th at 11:03 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like CNN will not call it breaking news when one candidate for president accuses another candidate for president of lying.
But Mike, it was on camera after a CNN debate. Let's talk politics. Welcome to Snollygoster, your weekly travel guide to lead you through all things Ohio politics. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, Ohio's Medicaid director has some harsh words for former Governor John Kasich's administration.
I thought Kasich was pro-Medicaid, right? Everybody, whatever, we'll sort it out. First, voter registration.
It's not that it's a hard process to update your information. It only takes a few minutes. It's just that some people don't get around to it. Maybe they move, they get busy, they just never get around to it. That simple mistake or oversight can mean they're no longer allowed to cast a ballot, a fundamental part of our democracy.
And such a minor oversight, canceling people's right to vote, has pushed a lot of states to move toward automatic voter registration. Here in Ohio, state election officials have made some changes around registration, including letting people update their information online, but we still don't have automatic registration.
A couple of state lawmakers are trying to move in that direction. One bill would automatically register people to vote when they attend a public high school or when they go to a Bureau of Motor Vehicles office. Joining us now is that bill's sponsor, Democratic State Representative Bride Rose Sweeney of Cleveland. Representative Sweeney, welcome to Snollygoster.
Thanks for having me, Mike and Steve.
Representative, what's your main reason for this legislation?
Yes, I mean, when it comes down to it, I think as you rightfully mentioned, I mean, our democracy is founded on the ability for citizens to vote and to elect representatives. So currently we have about 1 million people in the state of Ohio who are not registered for a variety of different reasons. So having this system that's really modernizing the way that we go about registering people to vote, but also our current system is not only antiquated and out of date, but it's also deeply flawed. And for years we've been purging voters, which means we have a system in place to update our voter rolls. But if you haven't voted in 4 years, you get sent a postcard. If you don't respond, then 2 years you get removed. This year alone, we removed about 500,000 people. And not just, you know, I fundamentally disagree with removing people for inactivity, but we saw that there were so many flaws for a variety of different reasons, bureaucratic issues, vendor issues, that we were removing eligible voters from the rolls. And we don't know how many were removed. And that's concerning to everyone. So this bill, going this way with the technology we have, that 18 other states have, is the best way to ensure that eligible voters, anyone who wants to, can register to vote. And I think it's important in the process, at any point, you can still opt out. If for whatever reason someone does not want to be registered, they don't have to. This just allows it to be more streamlined, cut red tape, and actually save taxpayers money.
And we have covered the quote-unquote voter purges a lot. It's a process that a lot of Democrats have objected to, but the U.S. Supreme Court upheld when it was challenged when Secretary of State, then Secretary of State John Husted, went before the Supreme Court. I think most of us are familiar with the motor voter law and how BMV officials ask if we want to update our registration. That's really just an advancement of that policy, what you're asking. But how would students attending public high school get registered to vote automatically? How would that work?
Yeah, so other states, so within the 18 states that kind of do have some kind of policy, I'll do it differently. And some have included high schools. And the reason why is because there's actually a really good report that came out that when people just focus on B&B, you leave a whole slew of people out, you know, people who are low income, people who don't have, need to get a driver's license so they don't have a car. And also young people are more delaying the time that they go and kind of interact with that agency because of public transit or, you know, wanting to be greener. So it's really important to me that we're not, this is the broadest way we can do this starting out at the gate. So currently, actually, under the Motor Voter Roll Act that, you know, all states are guided by, we designate high schools as a voter registration agency. So they already play a role in it. So we're just kind of enhancing it. We're not asking them to do anything that's not in within their jurisdiction. So not everything is worked out. I mean, when you go to implement this, you know, the Secretary of State working with the Department of Education to work out the best way to do this, make sure there's still safeguards that it is right people being registered
What about students in private high schools, homeschooled students? Would they be left out of this proposal?
Well, we can include, I mean, it would also be open to, you know, the idea is to get anyone who is eligible to be registered to vote. So we definitely would want to partner with them and allow them to work with us in any way possible.
Okay, so basically the schools would still have to register the students. They wouldn't automatically be registered. Like when they register for, you know, classes as a freshman in high school, they automatically, when they turn 18, I guess. When they turn 18, would they automatically be registered if they're a student at a certain high school?
Yeah, so that would be the goal that when, so the, you know, when most people think of government, they don't realize how siloed it is. So, what, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I've updated my, you know, the post office that I've changed my address. I contacted the Department of Taxation. Why doesn't the Secretary's office have that, you know, to go to each individual agency? So when a school, when a student is, you know, part of their enrollment is giving that updated information saying, this is where I live, this is my birthday, that would be, we'd have a system in place to electronically transmit that and let them at that time, if they did not want that information to be electronically transmitted to the office. So it would be an automated process. That would be the goal, because the whole system currently is opt-in, and we just want to move from an opt-in to an opt-out system.
The goal of here is to increase participation, but you're basically, you're going to a system where it's a system where the government's default is to make someone do something they may have no interest in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a problem? Is that the, I mean, I know it's voting, it's pretty benign, but you're still, the government is saying you're going to do this unless you say no.
Yeah, well, so when people say, you know, that's some of the arguments I hear from certain people, that it's not that hard to vote. Someone should have some kind of stake in it, but it's the reason why we have a registration system is just so we are, that if you're a citizen, you get to vote, right? So I don't know, the system of you filling out a paper that takes you less than 1 minute to do, that doesn't, you know what I mean? It's the reason why we have that in place is to ensure that the right people are voting or the right representatives in the right area. So we have a way to do that, that streamlines it, that cuts down bureaucratic processes. And by no means, if you register, do you have to vote. We're not mandating that people have to vote. And if you don't want to, we have a system in place that you can opt out, and we have multiple chances throughout that. So it's very simple to opt out as well. So this idea that we're, you know, kind of this big government, if anything, we're taking a little bit less of a bureaucratic red tape that exists for a system that is the basis of our whole democracy. So I just don't really take a lot of stock in kind of that argument. I mean, the reason why we have the process in place is just to ensure that, you know, we have secure and fair elections, and my proposal is actually the best way to go about this.
A similar bill has been introduced in the Senate. It has a Republican co-sponsor. Your bill does not. Why is that, and do you think that will hurt its chance of passing?
Yeah, so we actually, at the beginning of the year, me, the Secretary of State, who is a Republican, and Senator Manning had a press conference announcing a working group to talk about this issue. We kind of came together and said, it's not about this is a win for Democrats, this is a win for Republicans, this is just about good government. And from that kind of the basis, and the bills are very, very similar. It was getting this out there. I've had a lot of conversations with Republicans in the House, and they are open to it. And I didn't want to hold off any longer because any bill that doesn't get passed and signed into law for the end of the General Assembly, which is this year, will die. So it's important to me to get the issue out there, to move it, to move the needle, to start talking about, you know, dispelling some of the myths that are issues. And when you really talk to people, when I've been talking to people across the aisle, I kind of see that, you know, the light bulb goes off, that this really is not as, you know, quote unquote scary as, you know, some people find it to be. So to me, it's more working. We have a two-chamber system going through the process. I thought that to help the issue move forward, to start getting this conversation starting in the House. So I'm very supportive of the Senate bill. There are slight differences, but I think that, you know, just going through the legislative process and allowing this to be heard and be talked about, I think is important to the cause.
Looking big picture, Representative, you use the words scary. Oftentimes it is scary. Legislation to make it easier to vote oftentimes is controversial. The argument always comes down to access versus fraud. You know, both sides, honestly, use mm-hmm. varying degrees of hyperbole when they talk about disenfranchisement and voter fraud. What can be done to make voter access legislation, the fundamental of our democracy, what can be done to make this process less controversial?
Yeah, and I think that I love that question, because when you actually start talking about what the bill actually does, it's not complicated, it's not controversial. And I think that when, you know, me and the Secretary of State and, you know, Nathan Manning, both Republicans, said that, you know, when we start talking about, you know, on both sides, who use the hyperbole around this issue, when we talk about what we're trying to do here, if you're concerned about voter fraud, which is very non-existent, like every kind of data, you know, we do not have, you know, people that are swaying our elections who shouldn't be voting. But if you're concerned about that, this proposal is the way to make sure that you have the right people voting and you have secure elections. If you are concerned about disenfranchisement, and specifically with the voter purges, when, you know, I was doing an analysis of it, it overwhelmingly hurts urban people, young people, and people of who are minorities. If you care about that, this process puts the purge, you know, makes that process moot. So I think that coming together and just saying, we're just getting us into the 21st century with technology and allowing government to work better for people. If you want to vote, you can. And that's what it's about. I want any Republican, any Democrat, anyone to vote. And that's what every public official who got your, you know, people voting should want. So I think when you talk in those terms and you just talk about what this is doing, it really can move forward through the process.
Sounds so simple.
It does.
never is.
Right.
Bride Rose Sweeney, one final question. We often see bills of this nature come from lawmakers who later go on to run for Secretary of State. Frank LaRose, voter access was a big issue for him. Also Kathleen Clyde, who made a failed run at the same position in 2018, rather. Should we expect to see you as a candidate for Secretary of State anytime going forward?
I am looking to run for re-election and keep serving the great people of the 14th House District.
All right.
Okay, there we go. Non-answer. We appreciate it.
She likes her current job.
I don't blame her. Yeah. Democratic Representative Bride Rose Sweeney, the sponsor of a bill to move Ohio toward automatic voter registration. Thanks for your time and thanks for joining Snolly Goster.
Oh, thanks for covering it. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. We'll be right back.
In WOSU Public Media's newest podcast series, Rivet, young people share their unique pathways to professional success. Listen to This American Graduate Project. Find Rivet now in WOSU's mobile app or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snolly Goster. Another state official is not happy with how former Governor John Kasich left things when he left office.
You'll remember Governor Mike DeWine said Kasich left the transportation budget empty, forcing him and the legislature to raise the gasoline tax to pay for road repairs and bridges. Not an easy sell for then brand new Governor Mike DeWine. Now the state's Medicaid director says she inherited, quote, a mess from the Kasich administration.
Yeah, she said the way Kasich's team implemented parts of the Medicaid program was, quote, the worst she has seen in her 30-year professional career.
Yeah, reading from her letter, some words, inadequate, unacceptable, poorly implemented. She says the system has led to a lot of problems, including improper sharing of private information, errors in determining Medicaid eligibility, delays in payments to providers, on and on and on. She says this has also caused some providers to shut down.
A spokesman for the Kasich administration says, hey, wait a minute. He didn't say those exact words, but spokesman Jim Lynch says Kasich cut the growth of Medicaid spending from 9% to 4%. He expanded coverage to 700,000 additional Ohioans. And spokesman Lynch says current state leaders are building on John Kasich's 8 years of progress.
Why does John Kasich have a spokesman?
That's a good question.
Jim Lynch used to work for Ohio State University.
Yes, he's a good man.
I've talked to Jim a couple times.
He's
a very nice person. Nothing he said is wrong. I mean, Kasich certainly did expand Medicaid. It looks like he did not leave the department, at least if you believe Maureen Cochran, that he left this department a mess. More people have coverage, but Maureen Cochran inherited, again, a mess.
Yeah, it's a little blemish on one of the former governor's key achievements, which is the Medicaid expansion, which he was largely praised for, although some Republicans didn't like it. You know, the memo certainly gets lawmakers' attention. It's kind of a wake-up call to make fixes. Maybe some of those fixes will require some additional funding from the legislature and from
Good
the DeWine administration.
Good luck with
you know, she also mentioned that sort of tapped the brakes on this whole adding the work requirement to Medicaid eligibility. So this is a way perhaps to stall that a little bit. Who knows? But it's not unusual for members of one administration to complain about what was left behind by the previous administration.
What was unusual when you start talking about federal fines approaching $6 billion.
Yeah.
That was after the federal audit showed that there were a lot of errors in Ohio in determining people's eligibility, which could bring fines of up to $6 billion.
Worst case scenario.
Again, Maureen Corcoran says that they're probably looking at something more in the range of $88,000 if they fix the problems they have now.
Yeah, I think there's
a lot of incentive, too, obviously.
Yeah.
$6 billion.
What's unique about this is the harsh language and the whole public nature of this. I mean, this could have been done more quietly. I don't know. I think it's indicative of the way many on Capitol Square viewed the Kasich administration. Kasich did not always work well with the state government operation, with the legislature.
He didn't always work with them at all.
No. So
he went months without talking to Republican legislative leaders.
So I think that, you know, the DeWine administration with the whole gas tax thing, now with Medicaid problems, the new administration feels free to criticize an administration from their own party after they're gone. So it's just, I think it's just it's a whole part of the purging of the one administration to the new.
Yeah, and Kasich, like you say, he didn't make a lot of friends. And now this week, the Ohio Public Employees Retirement System voting to cut benefits for retirees. I mean, I'm not saying Kasich was deeply involved in the machinations of OPERS, but it's another example of the state having to solve big problems not that long after Kasich left office. Things that his office presumably could have tried more proactively to work on.
Yeah, it's, again, not terribly uncommon, especially if one elected official is leaving office with hopes of a higher office, that mm-hmm. person wants to make things look great while he or she is in office, and then let the next person clean it up.
Yeah, so, like your guy Michael Dukakis.
Yeah, Massachusetts miracle back in 1988 suddenly crashed after he lost.
Yeah, after Bill Weld last week, that's two Massachusetts references in a row.
I know.
Look at me. Anyway, on now to our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week, and that goes to Nancy Pelosi.
Now, we don't know if it'll work, but her delaying the delivery of the articles of impeachment from the House to the Senate has certainly increased the pressure on the Senate to call witnesses and introduce new evidence into the trial.
In the past few weeks, more has come to light. Former National Security Advisor John Bolton has now said he is willing to testify if allowed in the Senate. Also, Lev Parnas has gone on TV to say that Trump knew about all this. So it's a snollygostery move, but like you say, it might work.
You know, Lev Parnas could be the snollygoster of the week, too.
I mean, it's a hard name to say for some reason. Lev Parnas.
He's the Russian-American mm-hmm. who worked for Trump and was Rudy Giuliani's guy in Ukraine, lobbying, and also faces campaign finance charges. So he could be our snollygoster of the week. We'll put him on the bench this week.
He's the salutatorian.
Yes. But Nancy Pelosi, she gets it for her move to hold up the articles for impeachment, and we'll see if that shrewd move works. Nancy Pelosi, our snollygoster of the week.
Lev Parnas, maybe next week. If you have a suggestion for next week, whoever that might be, you can send it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to give us a good review on iTunes, and as always, tell your friends about us. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.